This is Living Planet. I'm Kathleen Schuster. This week, we have a What's Better installment for you to help answer your questions about how to make greener choices in your everyday lives. In this episode, we're going to hear from Living Planet's Jennifer Collins, who's been exploring the debate around the four-day work week. Working less for the same pay sounds great, but could it also help the climate? Hey, Jen.
Hey, Kathleen.
I hear you've been on vacation for a few weeks.
Yeah, I have been. I was actually just in my hometown, Dublin, for a bit of a visit. And while I was there, I also did some work, even though I was on vacation. So I took a little trip to probably what is a bit of an unlikely place to find out a bit more about this. And that was the local hairdressers for a blow dry. I think you call it a blowout in the US.
Yeah, we do call it a blowout. But I feel like a blowout in Ireland, I feel like I need to put that on my bucket list. That sounds way more fun for some reason.
I was very happy with the result. Had a lovely kind of curly blow dry, you know. So the salon itself is called Head Office. And it's in a really working class area of Dublin called Ballyfermot. And it opens from Monday to Saturday, 9 to 5, and it looks like your typical salon. You know, wash basins, a little reception desk at the entrance, a few workstations in front of mirrors, and then there's like a nail artist in the corner.
Is that where you got your nails done? Because they look fabulous.
I didn't. I got those in Berlin, but thank you. Yeah, but it's a hive of activity and there are just loads of regulars in there getting their hair washed, cut, coloured, styled, you know, sitting with cups of tea and coffee and just chatting, and the radio is kind of pumping out music in the background.
Hiya. Hey,
and it's a real community hub too.
But they come at the same time and you get to know the grandchildren will come in and get their hair done, their children will get their hair done. So you'll be going through the weddings, communions, confirmation, and you do get to know people over the years. But a lot of people just come in because they're lonely. A lot of people would come in just for a blow dry, for a chat, and they'd stay here for coffee. And we'd often get people staying here for 2 or 3 hours and they'd be finished in 20 minutes.
That's the salon owner, Amanda Dennison, and she's been running the place for about 30 years. And she got into hairdressing because...
I used to go with my mother to the hairdressers, and one of the girls there said, would you like to come in and try? And I did, and I loved it. Fell in love with it.
So Amanda is also doing something that's kind of a bit unusual in her busy salon, and that's implementing a four-day work week for herself and her five staff.
All the girls only work most 4 days and then 3 days and 2 days.
Why did she decide to do that? Because I can imagine that it's not that easy when you're running a busy business that's open 6 days a week.
So one big reason was that most of the women working there have kids.
As long as they let me know, they can change the days. And we can walk around them because life gets in the way. Sometimes they have appointments or their parents getting older now. They need to be brought places. Children are sick.
I can totally relate to that. I mean, I know a lot of parents. I'm a parent myself. And yeah, trying to work like a 9-to-5 schedule can be really tough.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, having an understanding work environment for that must be like a really important thing to have. But the interesting thing is that Amanda and her salon are also kind of accidentally part of this burgeoning movement to move to a four-day work week. And there are some pretty big pilot schemes around the world that have shown that cutting down to 32 hours a week for the same pay as 40 hours has benefits for businesses, employees and...
Reducing working time would reduce our carbon emissions.
So that's according to a number of studies and researchers like Jack Kellum, who you just heard there. He's head of operations at Autonomy, which is a UK-based think tank that focuses on the future of work and the climate crisis. They also work with companies to implement four-day work weeks.
So working 32 hours a week could be better for the environment than 40?
Yeah, and that's something we'll really get into later in the episode. But first, Kathleen, have you ever wondered where the 40-hour work week comes from?
Yeah, it seems like the 40-hour, 5-day week has been around forever, at least in the Western world. But obviously that can't be the case.
It's actually a relatively recent phenomenon.
A weekend probably seemed like a challenge to companies to implement 100 years ago and was similarly faced many of the similar criticisms that the 4-day working week does nowadays. You know, couldn't possibly work in this sector. You know, the economy would collapse. That was heard about the weekend at the beginning of the 20th century.
So let's do what we love on Living Planet and take a little historical journey into the evolution of work. Let's go back to, say, 13,000 years ago, before the advent of agriculture, to the time of the hunter-gatherer. You've picked up yourself a nice little haul of fish and some freshwater mussels. That'll pair nicely with the wild plants and nuts you picked the other day. Now you've just got to prepare your food and build a fire. You probably put in about 20 hours of graft this week, which is the average work time for a hunter-gatherer, according to researchers. Now, after you've had your meal, you can kick back, shoot the breeze with your group, or perhaps do a hunter-gatherer hobby. Fast forward a few thousand years and humans have switched from foraging to farming. We're living in larger settled communities, populations are growing and technology and wealth are advancing. You're probably working about 30 hours a week on the farm, tending to cattle and crops. But your work is determined by seasons and when the sun rises and sets. You're not required to clock in or clock out at set times. In the 19th century, as urban centres, wealth and populations grow, people are getting together, swapping ideas and inventing new machines that make economies more productive. Advancements in technology mean fossil fuels like oil and coal are more accessible and factories run on them begin to spring up. Hourly wage labour becomes the norm, but conditions in factories are often terrible. You toil 16 hours a day, 6 days a week in dangerous conditions with no ventilation. Sunday, the traditional Christian day of rest, is your only day off. You're not exactly happy with your lot. You join a trade union, which is campaigning for better conditions and wages, as well as Saturdays and Sundays off. One of the slogans, 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, and 8 hours for what you will, really catches on. Titans of industry aren't on board. They worry about the effect on their businesses and the economy. Some argue that 2 days off could make workers lazy and lead to moral decay. Idle days breed mischief, says one real estate mogul. The workers' movement starts to see some successes. In 1926, car manufacturer Henry Ford becomes one of the first employers to implement a 5-day, 40-hour work week. It's good for productivity, and other companies follow suit. Eventually, laws are implemented codifying things like paid overtime. Okay, so it's a bit more complicated than that, Kathleen, but that's a very condensed version of how the 5-day work week and the weekend were invented. And it's really stuck. Even though, as Jack Kellum from Autonomy explains, famous economists like John Maynard Keynes predicted back in the 1930s that because of higher productivity and automation,
we'd all be working 15-hour weeks by this point. We've seen these massive changes in the last 100 years, which have made society considerably more productive, and yet we're still working a very long working week and still have basically the same 2 days off that workers had 100 years ago. That doesn't square with the productivity improvements we've had. Where is it gone? Because it hasn't gone to workers, right?
Interesting. So why has the debate about shortening the work week gained such prominence again now?
So some economists and activists have been arguing for a shorter work week for quite a while, but it's really started to go mainstream.
Particularly since the pandemic, there's been an increase in companies particularly having a sort of difficulty around recruitment and retention for staff. So I think that's come up more and more as a reason that companies are interested in offering a 4-day working week. And
Kellum is referring to the ongoing labour shortage worldwide that's partly connected to strong economic growth. So there's just more jobs to fill, as well as ageing populations, which means there just aren't enough people to replace retiring workers. The US, for example, saw an unprecedented labour market reshuffle during the pandemic, and that became known as the Great Resignation. So basically, workers quit en masse for reasons like poor wages, inflexible remote work policies, and job dissatisfaction. And the lack of workers has really hit almost every sector. So restaurants have been struggling to find servers and cooks, hospitals are short on doctors and nurses, and construction companies need more builders. So essentially, it's a workers' market, and if staff aren't happy, they're just going to move on and look for better conditions, like shorter working hours.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So actually, a shorter working week is one of the reasons that Dublin salon owner Amanda Dennison says her staff have been with her for so long. Four of them have been there for over 20 years.
I'm very blessed in that way, because the girls are with me a long time, and it works out better for the business and for the customers. The girls are happy in here, and everyone says that walks through the door.
Autonomy has been working with London non-profit 4-Day Week Global, the University of Cambridge and Boston College on a number of ongoing pilot schemes in countries like the US, UK, Ireland, New Zealand and South Africa, which have been,
for the last 2.5 years, studying companies who are giving their employees 4-day reduced work weeks with no reduction in pay.
That's Juliette Shore. She's an economist, sociologist and professor at Boston College, and she's a lead researcher at 4-Day Week Global. Before we get into the climate impact, I'll just explain a bit about how the pilots work and the outcomes for businesses and employees.
Yeah, sounds good. Go for it.
So as part of the pilot project, staff retain 100% of the pay for working 80% of the time, but they have to keep up their previous level of productivity. The trials are mostly made up of white-collar firms, but they also include some construction, manufacturing and healthcare businesses too. And the UK trial has also got a fish and chip restaurant and a brewery. And in nearly all of the trials so far, most companies say they intend to stick with the reduced work week. Take the UK trial. Some 61 organisations signed up to a six-month pilot in 2022. Results announced in February this year found 89% of companies said the policy was still in place. More than half of them said they were making the switch permanent. Resignations have plummeted, which means firms don't have to waste time training new people. They also said they have bigger and better application pools, and
many of them say productivity went up at the very least. They're not losing productivity.
The trials used 27 indicators to measure employee well-being, including their experience at work, life outside of the job, and they found
just really remarkable increases in well-being on pretty much all of the measures. Burnout, stress, fatigue, more positive emotions, fewer negative, big decline in work-family and work-life conflicts, more exercise, less anxiety, better sleep.
In the UK trial, 96% said it had benefited their personal life and 87% said it had a positive impact on their work. And most said they just wouldn't like to go back full time.
If these trials are anything to go by, it seems like it's very good for employees. Surprise, surprise. But they also seem to be working for many of the employers. What about the environment, though? This is an environment podcast, after all.
Sorry, Kathleen, I know I'm taking a while to come to the environment part. So there are a few ways to look at the climate impact here, right? In the trials, Shore and her colleagues wanted to get data on
how carbon footprints for households and also the companies would be changing, because you have the building energy use, right? If a company is shutting down one day, you want to count that, but more people are in their houses, so they are using more electricity, heat or air conditioning, for example.
But Shore says the data on household and company energy wasn't really usable. They also wanted to see if any benefit from working less might be outweighed by what people did in their spare time. Like, would they jet off somewhere for the long weekend? But
it's really hard with carbon use, because carbon is an input into pretty much everything that people do. Everything you buy, every activity that you have has some energy component to it. I mean, some of it may be very small. You may be just walking somewhere, but remember, you're using calories, which mean you have to eat more, you know, so it's a devilish problem.
They asked people at the beginning and the end of the trial about their personal carbon footprint and the kinds of activities they were doing with their extra time. The idea being that more time enables people to make healthier and more sustainable choices. Instead of eating a frozen pizza or convenience food, which has a higher environmental impact, you have time to cook fresh food. Or instead of jumping in a car, you might cycle or take public transport instead to get where you're going. And what the researchers found was that people did make more sustainable choices, and they weren't flying all over the place on multiple vacations.
And when we ask people what they're doing on the off day, for the most part, they're staying close to home. They're doing low carbon things, personal grooming, housework and hobbies.
Interesting. So there's a correlation between just having the time to think about the environment and or just think about taking better care of yourself.
Yeah, exactly. You just have a little bit more mental space to do that. And that actually chimes with what hairdresser Amanda Dennison said when I asked her what she does on her day off.
For me, I go hiking.
According to the researchers, personal carbon footprint,
it does fall a little bit.
Okay, interesting. So not a huge drop.
Yeah, and the other area where they expected a big carbon saving was traveling to and from work.
I mean, there are some reductions in carbon use. Commuting by car goes down by about 1%. So very small. Commute time falls by about 1/2 hour a week. So that's significant.
So again, not huge.
No, though Shore says that's partly because they started the trials during the pandemic, when remote working became more common and...
The movement back into the workplace has been slow for a lot of people.
Okay, interesting. So the environmental benefits seem kind of modest.
Yeah, so Shore and her researchers say there are benefits compared to working a 40-hour work week, but it's something they are trying to collect more data on for sure. And we'll come back to another aspect of the climate impact a bit later.
I do have another question, though. I can see how this would fly in certain kinds of work environments, but what about a hospital?
Yeah, the four-day work researchers say it's not a one-size-fits-all approach, and organisations really have to figure out what works for them. Like, in an office, you might try to streamline your workflows, and when many companies did that, they dropped things like meetings, for example. But manufacturing companies, let's say, they might not have a lot of meetings to cut out. That doesn't mean that they can't make it work, though. Take the UK brewery I mentioned earlier. So brewing has these really intense periods of work, and they...
did time and motion studies on every one of their machines. Brewing involves lots of different processes, a lot of cleaning of equipment, and they figured out sort of how to order tasks differently and how to fit some tasks into the dead time in others, and ended up saving a lot of time that way.
Dublin salon owner Amanda Dennison said she no longer takes walk-ins and has switched exclusively to bookings, which makes schedules easier to manage. She does say you need to make sure you're taking in the same amount of money each month.
It'd be a certain amount of money they'd have to take in per day. And once they do that, and it covers for the week, yeah, you could do it.
But some places, like you mentioned hospitals, Kathleen, they might actually have to hire extra staff. And that's kind of difficult given the lack of staff globally. This actually brings us to some criticism of the four-day work week compared to a five-day one.
The point is the findings can only be applied to the companies that took part in the experiment.
That's Holger Schäfer, who's a labour market economist at the German Economic Institute, a think tank in Cologne. Basically, Schäfer thinks the results don't really tell us much about introducing reduced hours across the economy for two reasons. One is that the companies who took part in the trial wanted to, so there's kind of a positivity bias there. And second, there's no control group.
Why is that important? Let's say I look at how sales performance develops and see revenue has gone up or stayed the same, but I can't say anything about the impact of the four-day work week if we don't compare these findings to those of another company that didn't shorten its hours.
Schäfer also says productivity wasn't measured consistently in the trial.
Productivity is value added per hour worked. And what was measured there was at best sales development. But that's not the same as productivity. Productivity is turnover minus input.
And that many particularly large companies have already trimmed the fat off their workflows as much as possible.
I'm not sure where this productivity reserve is supposed to come from. We have companies in the manufacturing industry, for example, that have squeezed out every ounce of productivity for decades.
Actually, Schäfer says that a drop-off in productivity growth will be a disaster for the economy.
We're talking about a decline in the order of 20%, and not just for a year, but permanently. That is catastrophic, to put it mildly. The consequences are unimaginable.
We'll get to some of those potential consequences in a bit. But the idea of productivity growth gets to the core of some fundamental questions about the nature of work, how we value our time, and whether economies can keep growing infinitely on a finite planet. Ultimately, four-day workweek advocates say the big climate gains and emission cuts don't come from your personal carbon footprint, but...
when you slow down your growth rate, or if you contract, we see that in a recession, emissions fall because there's still a pretty strong connection between how much you produce and how much you emit. That's where you get the bigger savings, less than in the sort of household adjustment.
So something like that kind of happened during the pandemic. There was a big dip in CO2 emissions when part of the global economy shut down, but those emissions rebounded quickly when everything started to open up again. Several studies show a link between long working hours and high carbon emissions, particularly in richer countries. One paper Juliette Shore co-authored in 2012 looked at OECD countries between 1970 and 2007 and found that a 10% drop in working hours corresponded to a carbon reduction of around 14.6%. Another study by British environmental group Platform predicted that the UK could decrease its emissions by around 127 million tonnes by 2025 if it went down to a four-day week.
But what exactly is happening here?
It all comes down to productivity, and it gets a bit technical here, but imagine you're selling lemonade and you figure out a way to squeeze more lemons faster, or you make more lemonade with the same number of lemons. That means you're being more productive. You can take that productivity gain by selling more and raking in that sweet lemonade money, or you can work less.
It is very hard to take away income from people once they have it. Instead of income increases, let's give people increases in time. It's a trade-off of future income for time.
But if we do that, the economy stops growing or at least slows down. And I hear that's a bad thing.
Exactly. Without sustained increases in productivity, there is no economic growth, says the World Bank. And this gets to the question that some economists and climate researchers are at odds over. Basically, whether we can continue to grow our economies, just in a greener way, or if we have to forsake growth, at least in rich countries with high living standards that are responsible for most historical emissions heating the planet. According to economist Holger Schäfer, that would seriously hurt well-being.
And we must be aware that this has serious consequences, not only for our level of prosperity, but also what we can redistribute, for example, for social purposes. There are also goods and services that have to be produced. Tax revenue is roughly proportional to what we produce. That is the state's tax base. And if less is produced, less is taxable. That is unavoidable.
And really it comes down to how much we need to transform our economies in the face of the climate crisis. The answer to that, for some, is perhaps something like green growth. That means continuing to grow but moving away from greenhouse gas emitting fossil fuels, creating circular economies to reuse resources and essentially decoupling growth from emissions.
We've actually succeeded in the past in decoupling wealth and consumption and hope this will be the case in the future with technical progress. I can't say whether that will be enough. I'm not a climate expert. But I think that's a more promising approach because no one's left behind.
And Schäfer is right. Some rich industrialised countries like Germany have decoupled growth from planet heating emissions. A 2021 analysis found that 32 countries have managed to grow their economy without increasing their emissions. After accounting for emissions embodied in goods they imported from abroad, this fell to about 23 countries. But in big economies from Brazil to Indonesia, growth and pollution are still tightly linked. And a 2020 paper found decoupling rates were too slow to hold global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius. Current policies put us on track for a disastrous 2.9 degrees Celsius warming by the end of the century. Researchers say the consequences of planetary heating could also shave trillions off global GDP by 2050. So either way, countries have to be ready for a decline. And one policy that could
reconcile, in a way, ecological and social sustainability is working time reductions.
That's Philip Frey from the Karlsruhe Institute for Technology Assessment and Systems Analysis in Germany. So Frey actually did an assessment of how much work will be ecologically sustainable going forward.
The economic system that we have today is set up in such a way that continuous economic growth is very important to stabilize the labor market and thus also our social systems. So I think in that sense, these economists are right. We need economic growth in the current system.
But that got him thinking.
But just increasing our productivity, increasing our industrial output more and more might not be ecologically sustainable.
When Frey did his assessment, he found
a 9-hour work week would still be sustainable given our level of productivity and our level of carbon intensity.
That surely would be unmanageable.
Yeah, and Fry says himself that a switch to a 9-hour work week
would be something like degrowth by disaster or something. Yeah, it would also be unimaginable. I mean, I cannot see a social consensus around a 9-hour work week that would be linked to very, very deep cuts into consumption and various areas of our lives.
But he says the question for him is,
if we move towards a more sustainable economy, what can that look like?
What could it look like?
So there aren't really easy answers here, but Fry comes back to reduce working hours and uses the example of collective bargaining for German steelworkers. So green steel production is going to require fewer working hours. So unions pushed for a 4-day working week while maintaining levels of pay. So basically like sharing out the work rather than having layoffs.
And they basically argued, okay, we want a transformation towards a more sustainable economy, but in that economy, there will be less need for industrial manufacturing labor, basically. And what our proposal is basically to reduce the working hours per worker so we all can maintain our lifestyle and still provide green steel to the economy.
We'll need technological fixes like transitioning to green steel to stop the unfolding climate disaster. But that technology doesn't operate in a vacuum. Automation technologies and cleaner tech can liberate us from work and give us more time, or they can eat up any efficiency gains, like we've seen with bigger and bigger cars. And that can push us towards more growth.
Sounds pretty complicated, and like it would be a huge undertaking to get everyone on board.
Yeah, totally. But we also know we can't keep consuming and emitting as we are without walking further into environmental disaster. At the same time, it's really hard to imagine a world without growth and how we could get there. And the question of the shorter working week does give us a way to critically approach the world of work and how our economies operate. And it also gives us the space to ask what is ultimately important to us. Like, instead of focusing on what we could lose by limiting our consumption, we could look at what we could gain instead.
There's actually an attractive offer there that basically people could be freer to enjoy their own time. And what really moved me in the beginning of my research was a study conducted with people in retirement homes that were about to die and what regrets they have. And many of them basically said, looking back, I would have liked to spend more time with my family and friends and less time working.
Back in the head office salon in Dublin, owner Amanda Dennison says time is something she has really come to value as she's gotten older. During the Irish economic boom years of the 2000s, she hadn't even considered that she could work less.
We're afraid to lose our jobs. The amount of time that we had to let down our families because we were told by our jobs, and since COVID especially, you realise you can be closed down overnight and nobody has any control over anything.
And that extra time has also given her something else.
So I go up into the mountains and back to nature. And I think that gives you appreciation for the environment. That does make you realise like you're such a small pebble. When you stand on top of the mountain and looking out at the sea, you're just a small pebble in this world and you're not really that important. You haven't got that right to destroy. So I think that's... But I think, again, because I have that time, that mental space, I can take that in. Where if you're stressed and you have to work 5 or 6 days a week, you're not going to be able to take that in.
We'll be right back.
Hey, Living Planet listeners, Neil here to flag another podcast for you that tells in-depth stories of the climate crisis. It's called Climate One and pairs rather well with our show. Climate One is hosted by Greg Dalton and Arianna Brocious, two journalists who've been reporting on the environment for decades. And each week they go beyond the headlines, interviewing experts of all kinds, from artists to international business leaders, about how their work intersects with climate change. You'll hear conversations with US luminaries like activist and actor Jane Fonda, policymaker Gina McCarthy, climate scientist Catherine Hayhoe, and writer Rebecca Solnit. They regularly feature experts and leaders outside the US too, like artist and dissident Ai Weiwei. So why not add Climate One to your playlist? New Climate One episodes are released each Friday. You can find the show on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, Jen, that's, I have to say, I was really surprised by some of those findings. I don't know, like, can you imagine doing a 4-day work week with our job?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. We'd have to really change the way we work. I think it would be difficult, right? because it's just hard to schedule interviews. And I think also like trying to be creative, it can take a little bit longer. You know, you need to sit and think about things. I mean, it'd be nice if we could figure out. Do you? I mean,
yeah, I mean, this debate has been going on now for a while, and I always keep thinking about it in terms of like our work, like how would this work? And, you know, it kind of sounds like a dream to have one extra day of weekend a week, or one extra day, you know, to take care of stuff. But then, like, you know, we have a lot of public holidays here. And this year, a lot of them fell in May. And I definitely experienced that of like having to put, you know, a full-time week into 4 days. And I have to say, it was actually pretty difficult. But then you were also talking about, I think with one of the manufacturers, like you would have to redistribute the work. And yeah, I don't know what to think about it. I mean, I'm generally in favor of maybe working less if we can, but yeah, it's hard to kind of reconcile with what the needs are in terms of productivity, because the work has to get done at some point.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, one of the things that this like comes up, this idea of you shouldn't, if you're doing this 4 day work week and you're taking part in these trials, you shouldn't be having more intense work days where you're actually just end up working longer hours, or you're super stressed out on your days that you are on. You have to look at all of your workflows and your processes, and really look at like what can go, what's unnecessary here.
I think one thing that really resonates is, you know, just having the time to think beyond rushing through your work week. And if you have a family to take care of, or just even if you don't, like just, you know, private obligations or just taking care of yourself, it's a lot. And actually, I was talking to an expert recently for a different episode, and we were talking about environmental awareness. And yeah, and she kind of said, it had to do with like chemicals in sunscreen. And, you know, she was saying she personally had the feeling that, you know, people don't have time to think about every tiny thing that they're doing that has an environmental impact, because they already have a lot on their plate. And yeah, and so that really resonated when you were saying at the hair salon that, or no, sorry, it wasn't the hair salon, that in the study they found, you know, it did have a positive impact on how much people's behaviors were affecting the environment or their carbon footprint, because they had more time to think about how they were living.
Yeah, but even Amanda says at the very end there in the last quote that actually going out into nature and having that time gives her more time to reflect on the environment and to realise that we are just a very small part of this much larger organism.
Well, great stuff, Jen. Thank you so much again. And yeah, we look forward to hearing more from you in the future on Living Planet.
Thanks, Kathleen. It's a pleasure.
Today's episode of Living Planet was written by Jennifer Collins and produced by Neil King and me, Kathleen Schuster. Our sound engineer was Jürgen Kuhn. You can check out previous episodes of the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, we'd love it if you left us a rating and a brief comment about what you like about the show. Living Planet is produced by DW in Bonn, Germany.